Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
But the new uninvited house guest didn't stop at unpleasant noises in the dead of the night. It steadily got worse. Children would wake up shivering as something pulled the covers off the foot of their beds, listening to the thing smacking its lips in the dark.
Michael Jackson?
Stay tuned to hear all about that on The Reluctant Historian. What's up, everybody? I'm Liz Lawson, and this is our Reluctant Historian.
Dakota Lawson.
This is the podcast where I try to show my husband that history is actually cool. So, if you love history...
or you absolutely hate it...
this podcast is for you. We would like to begin by recognizing that we are recording on Treaty 6 territory and the homeland of the Métis Nation. We make this acknowledgement in recognition that we are settlers here on the land that belongs to the many different First Nations of Turtle Island. All right, Coda, what do you think we're talking about today?
Well, I just want to say first that you started your sentences with the word but. That are you allowed to do that?
You are, actually.
But...
So here's the thing. English teachers are like, you can't start a sentence with but.
That's what I was always taught.
Or because. Or
da-da-da. And.
Yeah. However, that is not an actual rule.
Really?
They tell students, you have to actually have a grasp on grammar to be able to do that correctly. And most grade 8 children don't have that grasp of English
grammar.
So you
got to have pro strats when it comes to English to be able to do that.
Correct. But, which I have.
Fair. I don't. But it also sounded like you were starting in the middle of a sentence.
I was.
Oh, okay.
I didn't write an intro, so I just read from one of the things that I wrote.
Oh, so we're going to hear that again?
We are going to hear that
okay.
again.
Okay, anyways. As I alluded to, it sounds like Michael Jackson's ghost is up to no good.
That's what he's doing. You know? We're doing not that.
We're not talking about Michael Jackson's ghost?
Shockingly, no. Mm-hmm. We're actually going to talk about a 200-year-old ghost story from Tennessee, that people might be familiar with.
And the ghost, he says to the kid, and you're the only 10
I knew you were going to make that joke. So I had to write this one in the office at work because I couldn't research it on my own because it's a scary story.
Oh, is this the really scary one?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And it's not, like, really scary. I just scare myself. So today we're going to be telling you the story of the Bell Witch.
The Bell Wait.
Not the Blair Witch.
Wait.
What?
I said no witches this season.
It's actually a ghost.
You used a technicality to fuck me. Okay, I said no witches and you fucked me.
I didn't do that. I would never.
I have been royally fucked,
listeners. You just wanted to say that word, didn't you? And you wanted to say it in that tone.
Fucked?
Yeah, but you're saying that,
fucked. I've been royally fucked.
Yeah. What's your golden nugget?
I feel like it might be the same as yours.
Perhaps.
Mayhaps it may be. Who's to say?
Murder.
We went to look at our new house.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
I assume that's yours as well?
Yes. We can just share a golden nugget today.
Yeah, it doesn't help that we're like, you know, lots of podcasters will like, they'll be gone from each other like for a week or whatever, then they'll come back and share a story and stuff like that. But it's like we're with each other all the time.
We're basically attached at the hips.
Yes. So
we're conjoined twins.
Yeah, like that movie
Gone with the Wind. I gotcha.
it may not be today, it may not be tomorrow, but for now and for the rest of your life, you will be attached to my hip. That's the saying, right? That's from that Gone with the Wind, isn't it?
No, his famous line is, frankly, Scarlett, my dear, I don't give a damn. And that was the first time that anybody had ever swore in movies. And it was a big
What's
deal.
My line from?
I have literally
hold
no
on,
idea.
Hold on, listeners.
Typing sounds ensue.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that's Casablanca.
Casablanca. That's the other only old movie I know.
Too funny. Too funny.
Yeah. So anyways, we went to our new house.
Yes.
And we did the walkthrough with the guy. Also, I didn't say this because I forgot to tell you. The guy that showed us our house, he looks exactly like the voice actor of Bender.
Oh.
I'm going to do another Google search.
Oh, good. I thought you were going to say you really liked him because he seemed quite nice. He was very friendly and helpful.
He was very nice.
He does not look like that man.
He looks just like fucking...
John DiMaggio.
John DiMaggio. Yes, he looks like John DiMaggio.
No.
Okay, hold on.
Dakota's confused.
Let's find other pictures of John DiMaggio. Okay,
so they have the same haircut.
They have the same facial structure as well.
Sure.
Masculine.
Okay.
Wait. Okay, look at this one.
No.
That looks just like the guy that showed us our house. I actually think it was John DiMaggio. It
probably was. We should ask him that next time.
I think so. I was like, in my head, because I couldn't remember his name, but I was like, I want to ask him if he's ever heard that he looks just like the voice actor of Futurama.
You should have asked him that.
But then again, to be fair, I also once thought in the movie Eight-Legged Freaks, which is about giant spiders attacking, that Dr. Phil was in it as a prominent role. Turns out he was just a bald dude with a mustache. So I have this problem.
Dakota can't recognize different
men. I don't have facial recognition.
It's a man. He's there for a John DiMaggio.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
that makes sense to me.
So, yeah, what did you think?
I thought it was beautiful. I was very excited. The kitchen's a lot bigger. The pantry's huge. I'm very excited to get in there and get it set up how we want to get it set up.
Yeah, yeah. Full walk-in pantry, yeah, which is it's massive. It's going to, we're going to have empty cupboards, I swear.
I think we are, actually.
Yeah. The upstairs, I mean, we're going to have a board game room, which is awesome.
And we'll be able to have our podcast up there, and we're going to be able to start doing Dakota's Recommends.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like our our podcast room, the sound quality is going to be a lot better because it's a closed-in space. Yeah. It's a small room.
Yeah, well, it's been really nice down here in the basement with literally towering boxes over us because it's given us that closed-off sound as well.
Has the sound quality been better?
It's been way better down here.
Oh, really? That's good to know. I mean, I don't listen to this shitty podcast.
Excuse
so.
You.
we're recording a couple episodes today, so we'll give you our full review of our house
when we move in now.
But
we won't be recording next weekend, but we will still have an episode for you next weekend.
Yeah, so in a couple weeks we'll give you the review of our house and give you how many whatevers out of 10
the house gets. Yeah. All right, the Bell Witch. So the story of the Bell Witch is the most well-documented haunting in all of American history. Our story takes place in 1804 in Adams, Tennessee.
I hate this time period.
And centers around the Bell family, when a man named John Bell moved his wife Lucy and their children into a stately farmhouse about 50 miles north of Nashville. It was a gorgeous property, surrounded by 100 acres of fertile land, and the crown jewel of the state was the house.
It's full of fertile land. He's like, I'm gonna get you pregnant, baby. This is fertile land.
It was a sturdy log house that was 1.5 stories high, with 6 rooms and a large front porch, where John, Lucy, and their little ones could sit and take in the fresh country air.
6 rooms?
Yes. That's big for this time period.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of wondering, a room size is smaller back then, though? A lot smaller?
Probably.
Yeah.
Lucy and John had 9 children, whom they loved dearly, and the family quickly became a respected fixture in the community, garnering a reputation for being good, decent people. For over a decade, things were pleasant and uneventful, and the family built a very nice life. However, this changed in 1817, and the placid life of the Bell family began to splinter and crack, ultimately falling apart, leaving jagged edges and fearful whispers behind. Ooh. One day, John Bell was tending his crops. He was growing hot and sweaty in the Tennessee heat when something moved in his peripheral vision. It was dark and quick, moving on all fours across the field several feet away. At first, he thought it was a dog, maybe a stray or a neighbor's pet that had gotten loose and had wandered too far from home. But as the creature approached, John's stomach turned with uneasiness. Something about this dog looked wrong. Below the neck, everything was ordinary, just a shaggy black dog running through the field during the hot sun. But its head was a different story. Its ears were unnaturally long, sticking up into the air. Its face didn't taper into a canine snout, but rounded with full cheeks and a twitching little nose. Whatever this thing was that had decided to cross his path had the body of a dog and the head of a rabbit.
Oh.
John rubbed at his eyes, uncertain of what he was seeing. Was it real?
Sorry, the body, the head of a dog, the body of a rabbit? Is that what you said?
Head of a rabbit, body of a dog.
Head of a rabbit, body of a dog.
Yeah.
That is terrifying. But I know one of the people at the group home that I work at, we're deciding whether we get a dog or a bunny. Maybe I should get him this.
Maybe you should.
Like, I couldn't make up my mind, so here. Here's a monstrosity for you to take care of.
Yeah. John rubbed at his eyes, uncertain of what he was seeing. Was it real, or had the long day outside gotten to him and played tricks on his perception? When he opened his eyes again, the beast was gone. John decided to put it out of his mind, instead choosing to finish up his work and go inside to spend a lovely evening with his family. They ate supper, talked about their days, and the children played lively games in the front room until it was time for bed.
I just thought of something.
What's that?
This really was fertile land. He had 9 children.
It really was, yes.
Eventually he's like, stop! Stop being so fertile! I wanted 2!
So the children went to bed. Some hours later, John and Lucy were woken from a blissful sleep by the children, who complained of bad dreams and a scratching sound outside. Something, they said, was bumping and scratching at the door and windows.
And in the distance they could hear, hee-hee!
John and Lucy comforted the children, promising them that nothing was there and to go back to bed. The noise was simply the wind blowing through the branches of the family's beloved pear trees and causing them to brush and bump against the house. There was absolutely nothing to be afraid of, they told them. Other strange occurrences happened in the next weeks. One of their sons, Drew Bell, was approached by an unknown bird that was perched on a fence that flew off and was of extraordinary size.
Ooh.
Their daughter, Betsy, observed a girl in a green dress swinging from the limb of an oak tree. And Dean, an enslaved person by the Bell family, reported being followed by a large black dog on the evenings he would go to visit his wife.
Sorry, okay, so I want to get this right. So they saw a girl in a dress swinging from a tree?
Mm-hmm. But I'm assuming, like, on a swing, but I'm not...
Okay, I was like, is she... Like, in my mind, she was hanging, like, dead.
No, but... I'm assuming she was just, like, swinging.
Okay, and she was an actual person, or is this, like, theorized that she might not have been?
Betsy just saw her.
Right, okay, and then...
Just a random girl.
And these Bell people had slaves, you're saying?
Correct.
When did Abraham Lincoln... come about?
1860-something?
For the sake of this joke, he was around in 1805, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And where was he? He should have been wrestling these people.
He should have been.
For the right for them to not have slaves.
Yes. The sounds continued inside the house. The family would go to bed. There would be strange sounds outside, scrabbling and scratching and thumping along the wooden walls of the house, and the family would all brush this off as wind in the trees. But one Sunday night, that all changed. The Bell children were awoken by something with no logical explanation. Richard Williams Bell was sound asleep in an upstairs bedroom, which he shared with 3 of his brothers, when he was jolted awake by a peculiar sound. It was a fervent, animalistic chewing, the wet crunch of teeth on wood, like a rat gnawing on the bedpost. Afraid that an animal had gotten into the room, Richard shook one of his brothers awake, and they decided to investigate and chase the vermin outside. They lit a candle to get a better look, but as soon as the wick came to life and a warm glow engulfed the room, the noise stopped. There was no skittering of tiny legs to indicate that the animal had left, and there was no rat darting back into the shadows. There was simply silence and an empty room. Whatever had been making that strange, gnawing sound had disappeared without a trace. The next night, the sound was back, that same chewing that seemed to come from the bedpost. As soon as the candle was lit, the sound would stop. This time, however, it didn't disappear entirely. Instead, the boys could hear it coming from outside in the hall. When they followed, it moved to the next room over, then the next, all the way through the house, running from the candlelight until every person was woken up and there were no more shadows that it could hide in.
This is giving me fucking House on Haunted Hill vibes. I'm like, ooh.
This happened night after night, with the family growing more and more exhausted and unsettled with each passing day. Nights at the Bell family home had once been a time for rest and respite, but now they were a time for lying awake, shivering, and listening for whatever horrors might come next to shake them from their beds.
I don't think they were resting much. I think they were just banging all the time.
Soon, other sounds came. The scratch...
it's just... In my head, I was just talking about them banging, and then you're like, soon, other sounds came. And, you know, you can work in your mind what I was thinking, so... Carry on.
The scratching of an animal's claws at the door, begging to be let inside, or else it would tear through the wood in desperation. The thunderous crash of large, heavy stones dropping onto the floor, the rattle of chains being dragged around the ground, and most disturbingly, the sounds of an invisible mouth licking and smacking its lips, and the horrible gasp of someone choking their lungs, fighting for a final gulp of air.
What kind of sick ghost is this?
I know, I was like, why is it like...
yeah, like ASMR hadn't even been invented yet, okay?
I don't know. I feel like that would be really scary, though, just in the dark and you hear... I'd be like, is it going to fucking eat me? I don't know.
The ghost is clearly fucking with them. He's like, this is going to scare the shit out of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the Bell family's new uninvited house guest didn't stop at unpleasant noises in the dead of night. It steadily got worse. The children would wake up shivering as something pulled the covers off the foot of their beds. Then it got violent. Screams of pain would wake up the whole house as the invisible tormentor pulled at the children's hair, yanking as hard as it could until tears of pain and fear stained their pillowcases.
This is just Paranormal Activity. like the movie. This is giving me those vibes.
It should. I mean, I feel like a lot of ghost stories build off of each other.
Yeah, this is just like making me tingle a little bit. Good. Not in a sexual way, if that's what you're thinking.
No.
Oh, I thought you might be thinking that. So I wanted to clarify.
Thank you. All the while, the family was afraid to speak out. The community was a small, devout Baptist town, and no one wanted to be the potentially demonic blight on the town's pristine face. As time went on, the Bells began hearing faint, whispering voices, which were at first too weak to understand, but sounded like a feeble old woman singing hymns. However, the encounters escalated, and the Bells' youngest daughter, Betsy, began experiencing brutal encounters with the invisible entity. It would pull her hair and slap her relentlessly, often leaving welts and handprints on her face and body. Sometimes she was stuck with pins. The Bells could...
Pins? What does that mean?
Like pins? Like a needle?
Oh, stuck with pins. I thought you meant like she was stuck. Like afterwards she's like, oh, I got pinned, you know?
Yeah. The Bells could no longer take the attacks and turned to their family friend, James Johnston, for help. James came to the Bells' house to observe, and after retiring for the evening, he was awakened that night by the same terrifying encounters that the Bell family had.
This ghost can travel?
He came to their house.
Oh, I thought he was just there.
No, he came to their house.
I thought their house was haunted.
It is. James came to their house.
Oh, yeah, but the ghost went back with James.
No, he stayed overnight to see what was happening.
Okay, sorry. I thought he went to his own house. No, I was like, if this ghost can travel other places, we're doomed.
No, it just, because he's there, James right. is there to see what's happening, and he's sleeping there that night.
Yeah.
His bed covers were yanked off, and James was slapped, causing him to spring out of bed, yelling, "In the name of the Lord, who are you, and what do you want?" The entity did not respond, but the rest of the night was peaceful. That morning, he told John Bell that it was a spirit, just like in the Bible, and soon word of the haunting spread, with some people traveling great distances to come and see this ghost witch.
So James can't keep his fucking mouth shut, is what That's that right. means.
Yeah. The apparition began to speak out loud, and at one point, it was asked, "Who are you and what do you want?" To which the voice answered,
Who?
"I am a spirit. I was once very happy, but I have been disturbed." The spirit gave a number of diverse explanations for why it had appeared, tying its origin to the disturbance of an indigenous burial mound located on the property, and sent people on an unproductive search for buried treasure.
Is this just poltergeist? So this is a really famous story, right?
This happened 200 years ago, and I feel like lots of other ghost stories take parts of it.
Yeah, because what you're describing, I'm just like, I've seen all of these movies, and they're all getting jumbled together in this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All the while, the spirit began to speak more and more, and it had full conversations with those who had come to see it. At one point, the spirit repeated word for word two different sermons that had been given 13 miles apart at the same time. The entity was also well acquainted with biblical texts and appeared to enjoy religious arguments.
This is weird. What a weird story this took. Now they're just like they're sitting around the table or whatever like that, having a beer, and this spirit's just like, okay, now... and then, I don't know, it talks about Moses or something like that. And why did fucking God put, kill all those boys? I don't get it.
Like, basically. The story at this point also gets, a little less detailed. Mm. So it's less exciting as the first part of the story. Okay. I'll just say that. So anyways, as another amusement, sometimes the ghost would share gossip about activities in other households, and at times appeared to leave for brief moments to visit homes after an inquiry.
So, two things. One, he can leave the house.
It's a she. It's a witch.
Oh, it's a she? Oh, okay.
Right, like a feeble old woman.
Okay, okay. So
that sings hymns randomly.
Okay, well, I guess I gotta change my ghost voice, but just like... I saw Rachel cheating on her husband. Spread the word.
Yes, this is...
that's what this is turning into. It's just like, it's their best friend. Like, now she's like some neighborhood, like, parents will come over and be like, hey, Bell Witch, do you mind babysitting for us? We need a date night. And be like, no worries, Sunny. And then she, like, is knitting while she watches the kids play basketball or something in her rocking chair. Did she just become their best friend?
Well, you'll see. John Bell Jr., along with his brothers Drew Bell and Jesse Bell, had fought under General Jackson in the Battle of New Orleans. I don't know what battle this was, so don't ask me.
I mean, I do, but, that's a story for another time.
A few years after this, in 1819, General Jackson, also don't know who that is, but... some sort of general in the American army. Anyways, he heard about the disturbances at the Bell home and decided to pay a visit and investigate. As Jackson's entourage, which consisted of several men, well-groomed horses, and a large wagon, approached the Bell property, the wagon jolted to a sudden stop. It had become stuck in a muddy creek bed, and the horses were unable to pull it. At least that was what the men thought. After several minutes of cursing and trying to coax the horses into pulling the wagon, Jackson proclaimed, "By the Eternal, boys! That must be the Bell Witch!" I don't know why I said it in that accent. Then suddenly, a disembodied female voice told Jackson that they could proceed, and that she would see them again later that evening.
Oh.
They were then able to go up the path, across the property, up the lane, and to the Bell home. That evening, Jackson told old war stories while his entourage set up their tents in John and Lucy Bell's yard. One of the men in the entourage claimed to be a witch tamer.
He's just like, he's got a zoo just filled with witches.
After several uneventful hours, he pulled out a shiny pistol and proclaimed that its silver bullet would kill any evil spirit that came in contact with it. He went on to say that the reason nothing had happened to them was because whatever had been haunting the Bells was scared of his silver bullet. Immediately, the man screamed and began jerking his body in different directions, complaining that he was being stuck with pins and being beaten severely. A strong, swift kick to the man's butt from an invisible foot sent him out the front door. Angry, the entity spoke up and announced that there was yet another fraud in the Jackson's party, and that she would identify him the following evening. Now terrified, Jackson's men begged to leave the Bell farm. Jackson, however, insisted on staying. He wanted to know who the other fraud was. The men eventually went outside to sleep in their tents while continuously begging Jackson to leave. What happened next is not clear.
Okay, we need to take a quick side tangent, okay? We're going to go way back, okay?
Okay.
Let's just assume that this witch has been around for a really long time.
Okay.
Jesus time, okay?
Okay.
So... she's fucking, they're sitting at the table, all the apostles and Jesus in the middle, and then the witch, only Jesus can see her in this situation.
Okay.
He's like, "You have a traitor in your midst. I hear, what's his name again?
Judas.
I hear Judas is going to betray you." That's how Jesus knew.
Yeah, it wasn't God.
No, it was the Bell witch.
Yeah, let's not make her angry.
Yeah.
So what happened next is not clear, but Jackson and his entourage were spotted in nearby Springfield the next morning, going back to Nashville. Some allege that Jackson later proclaimed, "I would rather fight the British at New Orleans than fight the Bell Witch." So I don't know what made him go back, but he left the Bell family house early.
She's like, in the night, he's like, he's like laying there, like half asleep, and she just like whispers in his ear, "If you don't leave right now, I'm going to tell all of your men about your little dresses you like to wear. You like the panties." And then he's like, we have to, the Battle of New Orleans is way cooler, guys. Okay, let's go. This is small town shit.
At times, the spirit displayed a form of kindness, especially to Lucy, John's wife, whom it described as the most perfect woman to walk the earth. The witch would also give Lucy fresh fruit and sing hymns to her. She also showed John Bell Jr. a measure of respect. The witch did not, however, like John Bell Sr., whom she called Old Jack, and claimed that she intended to kill him and signaled this intention through curses, threats, and afflictions. John had been experiencing episodes of twitching in his face and difficulty swallowing for almost a year, and this grew worse over time. Yeah. By the fall of 1820, his declining health had confined him to the house, where the insidious entity continuously removed his shoes when he tried to walk, and slapped his face when he recovered from his numerous seizures.
Oh, so she's just torturing him over time.
Yes.
I just, when you said that she was going to curse him and kill him, I was pretty sure her, like, yelling at him, "I'm going to kill you, shithead."
I swear, think that's kind of what happened.
That's so stupid. Sorry.
I got myself
there. Okay,
her shrill voice was heard all over the farm cursing Old Jack Bell.
"You're dead, motherfucker."
John Bell did die on December 20th, 1820. Immediately after his death, his family found a vial of strange black liquid in the cupboard. John Jr. sprinkled 2 drops on the cat's tongue, then jumped into the air, rolled over midair, and was dead when it hit the floor.
Is this where animal testing started? by the kid that kills an animal and becomes a psychopath?
Yep.
That's essentially how we started this. Yeah. Okay.
The entity then exclaimed, "I gave Old Jack a big dose of that last night, which fixed him." John Jr. tossed the mysterious vial into the fireplace, and it burst into a bright blue flame and shot up the chimney. Over time, Betsy Bell became interested in a man named Joshua Gardner, who was a man who lived nearby. They decided to marry, and everyone was happy about their engagement. Everyone except for the Bell Witch, who repeatedly ordered Betsy not to marry Joshua. The couple could go nowhere without the entity nagging them, and the constant pressure was more than Betsy could handle.
"He's no good for you. You need a real man."
And in 1821, she called off their engagement.
"You get it, sister."
Shortly after this, the entity visited John Bell's widow and told her that it would be leaving, but it would return in 7 years. And it left, and then in 1821, it did just that. When it came back, the entity spoke of the origin of life, civilizations, Christianity, and the need for a major spiritual awakening. And then, after 3 weeks hanging out with them, it bade them farewell, promising to visit John Bell's most direct descendant in 107 years. That person, Dr. Charles Bailey Bell, wrote a book before the upcoming date of 1935, which was when the witch was supposed to come back, detailing the events that had happened to the Bell family. But there was no mention of whether the witch did return. Many say that she never actually left. The entity that tormented the Bell family almost 200 years ago is often blamed for unexplicable manifestations that occur near the Bell farm today. The faint sounds of people talking and children playing can sometimes be heard in the area, and it's not uncommon to see candlelights dance through the dark fields late at night. Photography is especially difficult. Some pictures taken in the area show mist, orbs of light, or other phenomena, including human-like figures who were not present when the pictures were taken. The Bell Witch story endures in American history, and numerous theories have been put forth to explain it, but all have been debunked, so nobody knows what this thing was. Most researchers agree that something did happen to the Bell family that gave rise to this story, but what that something was, we may never know. So Dakota, what do you think?
That was great.
Thank you.
That was really fun.
Thank you.
yeah, I'm glad it wasn't an actual witch, because, you know, you just got me on a technicality there.
I did.
But I think a more apt question than what do you think is, do you think this happened in this situation?
I mean,
do you disagree? Do you think this happened?
No, I don't. I think that, like, when you read into it a little bit more, it kind of sounds like maybe Betsy Bell was making stuff up.
And maybe she poisoned her husband?
Well, Betsy was his child.
Oh, sorry.
Lucy was the wife.
Oh, really? I thought it was the other way around.
And so in regards to, like, what happened to John and why he died, I think he probably, like, probably had a stroke, just sounding like what was wrong with him. And then
they were thinking, oh, it's the witch.
Well, they were probably like, I don't know what this is, so yeah, it's the witch.
Not understanding it in the early 1800s.
Yeah. So I think those are probably the most.
Yeah. I mean, what does it say about, like, people who supposedly witnessed this witch and had political debates with her?
Well, that part I don't really know. But, like, well, so, like, that could be totally, like, you know, somebody's hiding in a closet and, like, a disembodied voice is saying that and they're having those conversations with them, you know? Like, that could be an easy way to explain that.
Right. Okay. Part of me wants to believe, but at the same time, like, I don't want her bothering us. I want to believe. That's...
Well, we don't live in Tennessee, so yeah. I don't think she's going to come here. I couldn't find out if she was the inspiration for the Blair Witch Project, which I've never seen.
Blair Witch Project, you know, I
think it was groundbreaking for its
absolutely
time.
At the time. But still, I've heard, oh, it's one of the scariest movies ever. And granted, I did watch it in mid-afternoon in the light.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found it very boring.
Mm.
They made a remake of it. I'm sure it's bad, but it's actually a video game of Blair Witch now, too.
No, thank you.
Yeah. But anyways, that's crazy. I like the bits that I got to make based on the fact that this witch was gossiping. That just opens up so much humor.
Yeah, it totally does. So it wasn't Michael Jackson.
Well, I've been wrong before.
Mm-hmm.
But I give this 8.6
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
gossipy, bitchy witchies out of 10.
Gossipy, bitchy witchies.
Yeah.
Got it. Cool. It's good.
Thank you.
It's not as scary as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Because, yeah, but during this, though, I felt like a little shivery.
Yeah, the first part is like quite tingly scary way that I've written it,
because it's more like this witch is trying to hurt all of them, and it's like, oh no, you know.
Yeah, and then she's just like, nah fam, let's talk about religion.
Yeah,
which could be hurtful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they weren't talking about actually getting slapped in the face, they were talking about metaphorically getting mm-hmm. slapped in the face. Mm-hmm. They're like, you know, talking about religion can really have that effect on people.
It
so
can.
It was like all a metaphor.
All a metaphor. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that's all we have for this week. We'd like to thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to hang out with us. If you enjoyed listening to what we had to say, please download our podcast from wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a review or tell your friends about us, because indie podcasts really do grow through word of mouth. And if you want to stay in contact with us...
No, that's my line, dear. It's, trying to take my job? I'll kill you. If you want to stay in contact, you can follow us on Instagram at The Reluctant Historian, or leave us a tip at buymeacoffee.com/thehistorian. You can also shoot us an email with future show ideas or corrections you may have noted to thereluctanthistorian@gmail.com.
So, we'll see you next week. Same time, same place.
Praise Jesus, or I will reveal how you wear panties.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.